Hello, page turners and outsiders. Welcome back for a very special, special edition of Outside the Pages. I'm Chaz Simons. I'm joined by Synesthetic Jack and two very special guests, the creative force behind That Texas Blood, Christopher Condon and Jacob Phillips. How are you, fellas?
Well,
I'm good. Yeah. How are you?
Doing well. Gotta say, I've enjoyed visiting the world of That Texas Blood that y'all have presented over the last couple of days. I fell behind on it when I was originally coming out in singles, but grabbed the trade. And man, such a good first arc. Like, I'm still reeling from some of that crime, some of that grittiness.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, excellent stuff, guys.
Thanks.
So, one of the biggest like vibes for me that I got from that book, and I was wondering if this was intentional on both your guys' part or just in a way that y'all work together, is this book leaves a lot of things to breathe, which is nice. Like, mm-hmm. A lot of times I think tension, as it starts to build, it gets too incrementally fast as it gets tighter, right? Like, it doesn't, sometimes when the rubber band is stretched out and twisted up a lot, the impact is going to be a lot greater than if it's just all balled up tight and like that. So, did y'all set out to intentionally kind of like draw this out to let that steam keep rising?
I think that the pacing of the comic is very much inspired by just Texas in general. There's just a slower pace to life in West Texas, and I think that was something that we tried to capture in how we told our story, in especially the first issue and then the first arc as well. Just the slow unraveling. It was something that was conscious, you know. It was something that I definitely tried to fit in. I think Jacob did a really good job of translating that into an actual visual, you know.
Yeah, I thought with the something I noticed was when something, you know, real bloody happens in the story, sometimes instead of showing it, there's just like everything kind of turns super red in like reflections in the art, and I thought that was pretty sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that go ahead, Jacob.
Oh, son. No, you go. I'm good.
All right. I'll go. No, I was just going to say, I did a podcast yesterday, and I was talking about one of the things that we were talking about was how, not to bring up the same thing that I talked about on another podcast, but one of the things that we talked about was how a lot of our book is, you know, sort of drama and conversations and things like that, and how you make an interesting visually to look at by, you know, you'll just excise a background, it'll just be a white background, or it'll be a red background or something like that. So really you just focus on the faces, the acting of it, which is such an important part of our book. I think that's what people gravitate towards is the acting, the characters.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how it started out kind of feeling like it was going to be all about Randall, and then a few issues in, there was like that sharp turn of it not being about Randall anymore for reasons I guess I shouldn't spoil for anyone who wants to read it still. And then becomes more about Joe Bob, our favorite cop.
Yeah, he's a pretty great sheriff. And mm-hmm. Jacob, I will say that you bring a lot visually to the characters' expressions that I think really, really highlight the story that y'all are telling.
Yeah, thank you. That's the bit that I like doing the most, I think. Like, yeah. You know, I'm not very good at sort of action stuff and, you know, but dynamic. No, I don't think I'd be very good at Spider-Man swinging through New York City, but just facial acting. That's what I really like to do. And like gesture and stuff like that, like trying to figure out interesting ways to like sort of put over what we're trying to do with gesture and body language and all that kind of stuff.
It definitely translates through, because there's a lot of times where like dialogue, especially with the sheriff with Joe Bob, where it's kind of that well kind of dialogue of like of just an old, I can like hear it in my mind, that Texas man, right, that just has like a word for it's going or whatever, but because there's that extra, there's sort of that extra beat that hangs on his shoulders, maybe a little bit up for the next well, or there's like that motion with the hat kind of vibe, like there's just that extra, I don't want to call it that extra cell, but it really like informs what these characters are going through, and that ruralness for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also couldn't help but notice that the old sheriff in the flashbacks had, oh, I have no idea how many, had like a billion Texas like idioms just slinging them out like every time, every page. It seemed like there was a new one. Yeah. It was pretty great. It's got to be fun. Not sure if those are real or if you came up with them. Or
some of them are real. Some of them are made up. I think when you read enough of the real ones, you start coming up with them on your own.
Yeah, probably.
yeah, they're pretty fun. My old roommate was really into professional wrestling, so he would always have like a podcast on some Texas wrestling promoter or somebody. And basically, I just would hear like some sort of phrase, and I just write it down because I'm like, oh, "This is too good." there's some that I just have like a notebook full of them that I still haven't used yet.
Nice.
Yeah, it's gonna come in handy.
Yeah, those will hopefully they'll sink their way into your real life conversations too.
Yeah. I mean, you never know, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you have to describe this Thursday at the Cinedomes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the only wrestling promoter stuff I know.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite ones I still haven't used yet, but we used one in the volume one was, I forget the character's name now, but she says, you're acting like somebody pissed in your Cheerios. That was a good one. And then the one that I still haven't used yet is this was a wrestler, The Undertaker, was talking about something. He said, I hit you like a sack of potatoes. What? But I want to use it in something.
I think that might be my favorite one, only because like hitting somebody like a sack of bricks would be so much more painful. Like saying potatoes, like I want to hurt you, but I don't want to kill you on accident. Like
that'd be moderately painful.
Yeah. Depending on how lumpy these potatoes are.
Yeah. Goodness. Yeah. I also just wonder when you're going to get hit with a sack of potatoes. You know. In life.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. I feel kind of bad, fellas. I'm gonna just say it right now. I forget to ask questions because I'm just enthralled and want to like gush to you both about how much I enjoyed y'all's work. So I'm gonna do that again now, I guess, and just say like how much I really enjoyed this story. How much of it would you guys say was informed, like you're saying, like really based on Texas? And I could see this being like a real part of Texas for sure, because there's still like that big swath of America in the middle that feels like unsettled because it doesn't have the big super populous popular cities and in big media, I want to say, right? Like nobody's making Judge Dredd where it takes place in like Iowa 2 or whatever. But I could see this being like a very real part of America and the West by extension. But how much of this would you say was informed by like Westerns overall? Like, did you set out with like a real like Cormac McCarthy kind of vibe in mind, or did it just kind of come out because of the setting and characters?
I mean, Jacob can sort of talk about how he was inspired for, you know, how he captured the visuals. But I mean, I can say that I definitely like Cormac McCarthy an awful lot. I like Jim Thompson. One of my biggest influences in the first arc, especially, was there's two things in particular. HUD, which is a Martin Ritt film, which was based off of a Larry McMurtry novel called Horseman Pass By. More drama, but it is set in Texas, in West Texas, I believe. And then there's also very much an inspiration was Paris, Texas, the Wim Wenders film. Just my writing of it. But was it, so did I like look at anything in terms of, you know, trying to gather story ideas or anything like that? No, not necessarily. Paris, Texas, again, was really like a tone. It informed the tone mostly. I would say that HUD was the biggest inspiration in terms of story, because the second arc was very much inspired by sort of the idea of like what happened after that film and that book. And so it was sort of a mix of like what would happen mixed with like a little bit of Hamlet and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But it was more so just based off of the actual West Texas. We have characters that are literally based off of people that are in West Texas, in Marfa and Fort Davis. The guy with the eye patch in issue one is a literal guy in West Texas. He used to own a place called The Lost Horse, which is, we have The Lost Soul. So there's places that are based off of real places. But Jacob,
I actually used the, in issue 13, there's just one panel in the bar, and that bar is the real Lost Horse bar.
Oh, dang.
it's quite sort of cropped in, so you can't really tell. It's just like, you know, set, you know, just to give the vibe, but the stuff around the bar and stuff like that. I think that things like that are like things that you can't really make up, because I, you know, filling a normal room is really hard, but like something like a bar or something like that where they've like collected things.
Yeah,
and especially because I live, you know, I live in the UK, so I've not got no idea what's in a bar in Texas, in the middle of, no, in West Texas.
Right.
But like, I think, yeah, visually, yeah, that first bit of Paris, Texas, and then that other Harry Dean Stanton film, Lucky. Like, I watched that maybe just before starting during the second arc. So like, actually watching stuff, I didn't go out of my way to go and find stuff to take reference from, or like, it's usually just sort of seeps in, you know, as you watch things over the years. But some things like, yeah, so I watched Lucky, and there's like just like the inside of the like the store and like the little side streets and stuff like that kind of thing that looks totally different to how it does where I am.
And that's also like Harry Dean Stanton. Like
getting stuff like that is so helpful, and like, yeah, like stealing screen grabs of stuff. But and I do like, because even like houses look different, so like, I can't go out and get photos of a house here because it looks nothing like how it is there. So like, I follow loads of Instagram accounts, so like this one called Old Cheap Houses or Cheap Old Houses, but it's just loads of houses that are sort of run down, but they're usually like out in the sticks, you know, but all in the States. So I can find these like little houses. So like the house in issue 13 is based on one of those. So that's actually, so if you want to buy that house, you can go and buy it for like, oh, you'll read the issue, you can go and buy the house. I think it's like 75 grand or something. It's not like, they're all like pretty cheap rundown houses. But yeah, like stuff like that is always like weird things that, because otherwise I'm just Googling it and finding the same images as everyone else that's doing it. So it's trying to find places that have got, you know, good reference. So like this, all these are like books that I bought recently for like street photography and stuff through like the 50s and the 70s. Just trying to find like what things look like and what people look like, and like trying to find reference for like a real house, like the interior of a real house in the 50s is really, really difficult. Because like you Google it and it's all like super, well, like modern for them, like brand new 50s stuff, but actually they'd have loads of like 30s and 40s stuff, you know, that they've collected over the years. So it's like trying to do all that is, that's the difficult bit.
I like that approach.
Some of, some of the stuff I visited Texas in June, late June, early July, right before Delta hit, and I sent Jake some photos that were, one of them I believe you just basically used that photo for the reference.
Yeah.
Which was the, what was that, the library, right?
Yeah, I think I just put a car outside it, and other than that, I just used the same photo. But then I built like a fake interior on SketchUp for that building, so like to match that one photo that you sent me. I was googling away at other libraries from the time, and then I sort of built a SketchUp model of the inside so I can sort of move around within it. There's lots of stuff that goes into finding that final image that you see in the book.
It adds a really nice touch, though, because there is, like, even within the context of the story, there's, like, this accumulation of things, right? Like you were saying, like, a 50s house, it wouldn't be the pitch presentation of, like, this is, and this would be your living room, and look at this futuristic kitchen. It would be the, like, okay, once we get money, we'll get that cool couch and we'll get that nice table or whatever. Yeah. But for now, we've got grandma's couch and grandma's table, and that's fine. And like,
especially for like older characters, where they might not have bought anything for 30 years.
Right.
So it's like, so then they've got stuff from the 20s.
But you got to look up,
not,
like,
again, it's not
1930s,
like the
1920s couch.
Yeah. But it's never like the stylish ones that you can find online now. It's all like the horrible ones that have been thrown out. Yeah. It's not like, you know, reverb. Retro chic. It's just
right.
It's just what retro. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That works. That works really well. It really helps sell the vibe. And there's like a classic feeling to this book that's surprising to me at times. Like I got so lost in the vibe of like the Western tale, right? Like you have your sheriff, you got your brother come home, right, to investigate that murder. We got like the town bad guy. We got all the big beats, right? Which I'm sure is, now that I hear how much of it is inspired by life in West Texas, is still not as far away as I thought it was, Western era. But there are times, shockingly, where it'll like transition to something very modern. I won't say very modern, but much more modern than whatever we've just experienced. And I was like, wait a minute, was that flashback? Were we looking back at a different time? I think when Marcia gets there and is like, no, I paid $50 extra and is like showing the cell phone to the guy, in my mind I was like, wait a minute, cell phones? What? Everybody's using walkie-talkies. Like even earlier, there's the scene with Martha with like, just call your wife on your cell phone. Stop using the radio. But that small town life of like, I'm sheriff. I'll have to use the radio. I don't care. But
yeah,
there's like a shocking,
it's nice not having I think the like things like phones and stuff like that, I feel like you can't rely too much on because it's so easy to solve all the problems with it. Which I know, like, so with things like where I've been calling my dad's work, so like Reckless is in the 80s, and you know everything that Ed writes is pretty much like period piece, because he's like, otherwise everyone's just on their phone and you can just ring up and like you can Google where things are, and it's like it takes out all of that stuff where you're like trying to find things and stuff like
that. The legwork part,
yeah, because now you can just Google it. But I always get really thrown out of things anyway when like phones are like watching The Simpsons when they use like mobile phones and you know they have like an iPhone in The Simpsons, and it's just bizarre. So like, but it sort of makes sense, but then you don't want to overuse it, do you? I think it can sort of pull you out of that sense of, like, the place itself, and it's like, oh, that's very real.
Yeah. I think it all kind of just ties in with it being, you, like, explained that there's practically no cell service in the town they're in, so that kind of explains it, too, in a good way. It, like, yeah, rationalizes the lack of phones.
Yeah, it's also, it very much is sort of, you know, it really just does feel like there's sort of a timelessness to going to those sorts of places, though, which is even in West Texas, where it's just, I don't know, there is, you know, you do have a cell phone, but you're still, you know, things are sort of like either 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you still feel like you're sort of existing at this midway point. You don't know exactly when you are. But yeah, I mean, it really worked out for the first arc that we had Randy forget his cell phone in his hotel room. cell phones are annoying to me, for especially, you know, trying to come up with, like, oh, why is he not answering his phone, or why is he not Googling this thing or whatever. But yeah, cell service is shoddy in places in West Texas, so it's also accurate.
And cell service is shoddy just about anywhere, really, when you think about it. I'm with you on the phones. Like, what an amazing invention, but also what a terrible way to enjoy media now. Like, in my mind, when you just said, like, you have to explain why they didn't just have their phone, when, like, we could just, like, I could just make that a part of my suspension of disbelief before I go into any movie, which is just like,
yeah,
general cell phone rules don't apply in this Dwayne the Rock Johnson world that I'm going to
visit
for 2 hours or whatever.
Watching a cop or a spy movie, and it's all just about their hackers and their tech gear. And you're like, man, what happened to the good old fashioned?
Yeah. Nothing is as exciting hacker wise than 1995's Hackers. That was exactly. That was peak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's not 1995 Hackers level, then we don't want it.
Right. My favorite was in the Kong versus Godzilla film that was out last year. And there's like a bit where they break in to the, you know, the mecha Godzilla thing, and they're like hacking his computer, and they just like spill water on it, and it like hacks it for them. Yeah. It's like something ridiculous. I was like, yeah.
That was some writer somewhere who was like, we got him all the way into the room, but we didn't give him any of the hacking skills. What do we do? Well, like, they spill water on it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That happened to me once, too.
Just, you know, bang on it. That'll make Godzilla work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wild stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that, you know, if somebody uses a cell phone, it sort of just removes any of their, you know, their ingenuity, what they can do. It just it becomes less human immediately, because all of a sudden they're just able to do whatever they want. You know, it's like basically like a modern day mother box. You know, you're just able to do whatever you want with it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I would think too, if you take that beat to have them call somebody and be like, have you seen this person? And then the person on the other end just says, like, no, they're still going to want to go down and, like, that guy's lying to me. Like, I don't need an extra beat to sell me on the fact that the bad guy is going to be a bad guy. Like, you just don't show him on the phone for no reason. I want action. And thankfully, y'all deliver on that as well. Y'all deliver on that action without that cell phone usage.
It's also nice to see him hit the library, you know. You don't see that much these days either. That was good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just love libraries in general, and then this sort of idea of, I don't know, especially if you're making something that is set in the 80s, it's like, obviously, if you don't have a cell phone, you got to look for information somewhere. Where do you go? You go where the encyclopedias are, you know, and I don't know. There's something just so fun to me about just going through like a row of books and like finding that like one piece of information that you're looking for.
when so Chris came over to the UK, when was that, a month ago? Yeah. He came to Manchester, and we went to one library. We went to like the big central library in Manchester, and that was like the first thing we did, was like go and show Chris that. And then we went and stood outside another library because we couldn't get into it. And we just looked at the outside. But it's like it's the world's oldest English speaking library. But we couldn't get into it because you have to like book a tour, and we didn't book a tour. So we just stood outside for like 5 minutes in the rain and then went somewhere else. Yeah,
we tried to give them the puppy dog eyes, see if they'd let us in, but
you didn't do that. I came all the way from America, please. When you said a lion outside of a library, I was like, whoa, yeah, definitely had to be overseas. I don't think there'd ever be a lion outside a library here. Maybe that's just Las Vegas speaking. That's probably...
No, I think it's like that here in California, too.
It's like that pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
Pretty sure libraries are getting, like, shut down, unfortunately.
Because of the internet. Because of cell phones.
Yep.
It's all right there in the palm of our hands.
Makes power of the sun. Palm of my hand.
There we go. Trying to think. What else can we say about this book? Jack, do you have any other questions? Any other comments?
Off the top of my head, what about all the occult stuff with the cult of the bat? Is that much grounded in reality, or is that all fictionalized?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, it's all fictionalized.
Okay.
I like the idea of sort of the grounding the sort of like Lovecraftian God thing with, you know, real gods from way back when, like Kamazotz.
Yeah. So the god himself is.
Yeah. So, real. I mean, okay. It's a real god, but it's, I mean, real.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah. Quote unquote. Yeah.
But, whether the cult actually exists, no. Maybe there is some cult, but it's not called what we call it. Bats are very much prevalent in Texas, though, so that's sort of a real thing, which we sort of alluded to also in the first arc, in the backups in the first arc, which I've reread recently, and I think it's awful, but that's another story.
You're being too critical on yourself. Yeah. Everybody looks back at their work and usually thinks, I could have improved this, but...
The saving grace is that I'm able to say that Randy wrote it. So
that's I was gonna say.
It's not your fault.
For school, it wasn't even, or no, for a magazine, it wasn't even. It was fine.
Yeah, it was for like a school magazine. I did a talk at a university, and they asked me to pick something to read from the book, and I was like, it's a comic book. It's kind of hard to read from something, unless I just do character voices, and that would be really weird. So I was like, maybe I'll just read the backups, because that's a short story. And then I reread it, and I was like, if I was going to read this, I'd want to edit the whole thing, and that's going to take way too much time. So I actually ended up reading the dream sequence from issue one, because it's all a monologue. So I was like, oh, that's actually the perfect thing. So I just, you know, shred the pages, and I would read the monologue. So, I didn't read the short story. Long story short.
Sounds like you made an informed decision. That monologue is a good choice too for something to read out loud to like give you the real the real like venom of the book. That's pretty good.
Yeah, there's some.
Yeah, I'm not reading any of the first arc I've not read it at all since the script, so I can't go back and look at it. Like I always have to go back and look at it for like reference of what I did before, you know, to make sure it all matches. But there's like especially the first sort of 2-3 issues, I'm just like, oh god, Why did I do that?
I feel similarly.
And then it's like, when I redraw this location, do I make it better? And do I just draw it as it is, or do I like slowly just like improve on it every time I draw it? Which hopefully is what I do, but who knows?
Slowly add a like new fresh coat of paint to some exterior buildings.
We did it with Eversol too, unless if we're gonna George Lucas him in Volume 1 when we get a reprint.
That's very true, yeah. Yeah, he's had I think 3 or 4 different faces now.
Yeah.
And he's only gotten prettier.
See?
Yeah, he has. Yeah, I think there is a version of the issue 7 cover that's like it got to the point where it was online and he looks different on the cover than the actual printed cover. Like he hasn't got his beard or whatever, he's just got clean shaven. But that is somewhere. I kept posting it by accident and not realizing. So it's
The actual cover, Jacob just showed up with a Sharpie and just drew a mustache on.
Real fast. That's how I do all my art too. Just on top of something else. Quick, go!
Yeah, every time I sign one, I just draw it on.
Give everybody an eye patch or a mustache. There we go. Yeah, perfect.
Does he still look like he's? So I've got the cover there, but he sort of looks like that, but it not like not really. Like he doesn't. There's quite a lot of it changed. He's got a different nose.
Well, I'm pretty sure you did the cover first.
Yeah, I did. I think I did the cover like quite a way before I did any of the interiors.
Yeah. So it's all right. He shows up in the last panel.
I haven't gone back to see what Sam looked like in that. You know, in the dream sequence of issue 1.
It looks pretty good. I don't know if he looks the
same. Let's have a look.
It's pretty similar. I mean, you definitely got it down. I haven't actually reread the entirety of the first volume. I kind of want to, because I'm working on the third arc right now, and I kind of want to reread it all to kind of make sure that it's all, it all reads pretty well, but I'm just scared of being like, oh, why did I write that? You know?
I think Sam put on some weight between the dream and the second arc. But other than that, he looks pretty similar.
There was a hot dog Joker contest in the county.
We changed
Joe Bob as well from on that newspaper clipping.
Oh yeah.
We made him look. He's like way older in the original clipping, and then we changed it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I changed that clipping again for the back matter. Whatever issue.
Well, but we did say that it was revised, so.
Oh, yeah.
Covered all the bases.
So maybe the one that Joe Bob has in his office, this is my explanation, if anybody asks. Joe Bob has the original printing on his wall, and Eversol has the redo in his files.
That'd be pretty cool.
That's in issue 12, so you'll be able to read that. I realized that I screwed something up in there, but I'm not going to tell you what.
Ooh, it's going to be like a Marvel No Prize. I'm going to have to look for it.
Yeah, exactly, except you're not even going to get a No Prize.
I mean, I change things constantly and like miss things out, but I don't even tell you about it, Chris, normally. I'm just like, I'll notice, like, you know, after I've given you the page, I'm like, ah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, there's like, things will change from like panel to panel when I just forget to draw them in and, you know, stuff like that. But no one seems to notice. I did realize recently, I was reading another book and I was like, yeah, I don't look at this how I look at mine. You know, like, I just like, you know, you just go over it, don't you? Unless you go back and actually look at the artwork, then you don't even. You don't take most of it in. So why do I even bother? I mean,
just put black and white my words in the panel, and that'll be which we did for the pitch actually.
That I was gonna say that could be an Eisner issue right there. You never know. like all text bubble issue or something.
Well, so we did that. So we did that for the pitch because I just honestly couldn't afford to pay Jacob for the other two pages. So I was like, can we just put the words in the panels? And then I was looking back on it because we posted it for a Patreon post, and I was like, that was really ballsy to just put all this dialogue in these panels, you know, like it is a sequential scene, but it's just dialogue.
That's like is that the first page of the pitch as well?
It's the first page. I'm sure that Eric opened it up and he was like, what is this?
It made me want to keep reading, though. I'll tell you that.
All right. Like they seem to have accidentally sent me a novel.
Yeah. Hey.
Could it worked, I guess. Yeah. Be an image first. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, so I guess we've talked about how rad this book is and all the things we like about it. How did I guess it all come to be?
Well, basically I was trying to get a film off the ground, and I had asked Jacob if he wanted to do the concept art for me because I had seen his stuff in the back of Kill or Be Killed, and to my great luck he said yes, and that was when we started working together. It was sometime in 2017. But we were very much sort of, you know, it was very professional in that we barely talked to each other. And when we did talk to each other, it was about exactly what we were working on. Then we went and talked to each other. And now we're like, I'm sending him pictures of my baby niece. He's sending him pictures of his kids. So things have progressed.
Yeah. Yeah, now it's impossible to find the work stuff like through the chats. It's just like having to scroll back like through like pictures of dogs and like,
I've started bookmarking stuff because I can't find it anymore.
I didn't even know you could do that.
That's a good way to go. Yeah.
Well, no. I put it in a browser. So we have Dropbox folders, and I'll put it in the browser and then bookmark it because I'm like I would literally scroll through like thousands of messages to find
it. I know.
Because you'll be like, oh, new inks are up. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I'm like, oh, crap. I can't go
Where was that link?
I know. It was much easier to find things when we only talked in email. So we could just, like, I could just search
everything. Yeah.
But
I'm glad we've progressed, though.
I'm happy to hear it as well.
We just need to move it over to WhatsApp so we can search the chat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we could do that. You guys are watching the sausage get made over here.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I was going to say, we're like right there on that.
Exclusive behind the scenes.
Whilst we're talking about that, I just realized more work talk. I haven't done the book plate that I was meant to do, and it's not been handed in. And I was meant to have done it.
I blame Image.
I also blame Image. I just realized it's Wednesday. It was meant to be in on Friday, so.
Oh, it's all right.
Yeah. Whatever. I guess there's no book plate coming.
That's all right.
It's because Thanksgiving this week. Over.
Check out our Patreon, and we'll do a book plate on the Patreon instead.
I do think that, I mean, I don't even know if we did do it, if it would have gotten to us on time.
No, I don't think
I'm not convinced that it would have been on time. We were going to do a book, like an exclusive book plate for like the first however many orders in you know, of the trade from Diamond. And then just basically things got lost, you know, in emails and all that.
Yeah.
We'll do it as a Patreon exclusive instead through the store.
Yeah, that's fine by me.
Yeah.
So everyone subscribe to the Patreon, whatever the link is. Link in the doobly-doo.
There we go. We'll find the link when we post this episode. We'll give you all the bump. Check out this exclusive offer on their Patreon page.
Follow the link, diddly.
Diddly, diddly. On the subject, bringing it back around to Westerns, I watched The Harder They Fall. Have you seen that? The Netflix.
Good? I wanted to check that out, but I haven't yet.
I think, you know, it looks quite good and it's very slick. It sort of feels like a like an Ocean's film, like a that kind of
thing.
It's
okay.
Like super like just in the way that it's put together, it's super slick. But there's a song in it and it's got like diddly 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 in the lyrics, and I was like, this is just Flanders singing a western yeah, like a country and western song. I mean, it's worth it's worth watching, but
just for that.
It's just for that one song. I heard it and I couldn't unhear it, and it's just diddly diddly diddly.
I haven't watched that one yet. I did watch Ghostbusters Afterlife, and
I'm seeing that tonight. Is it good?
You know, there's a lot of people that complained about it, and I really don't think it's as bad as everybody said. It's not great, but it's also not half as bad as everybody said.
I saw some good reviews, but only the ones that they were post, like, you know, the Ghostbusters Twitter was posting. Like, some people gave it some decent stuff. I didn't read any of them because I just want to go and watch it. But
yeah, there was one review that I actually saw today, which I'll send over to you, which was on Film Freak Central. And they gave it 2.5 stars, but it's like a good review.
It's 2.5 stars, I swear.
I rewatched Ghostbusters and I rewatched Ghostbusters 2, and then the next day I saw Ghostbusters Afterlife, and I was watching the movie, and I had read all these like 1-star reviews, and like watching the movie, I'm laughing, and they kept saying there's no jokes in the movie, and I'm like, Paul Rudd's hilarious in this. What are they talking about? And then I don't know. I just kept reading all this stuff. It was like mocking, like there's like a kid named Podcast in it, and they're like making fun of it, and that like they literally make fun of the name in the movie. So I'm like, what are they talking about? Like they literally poke fun at the name in the movie, so they know. I don't know. Anyway,
Have you all watched The Eternals yet? Because I enjoyed that, and that got loads of hate.
Eternals, I thought was pretty solid. Like visually, it was pretty stunning. I think that I still just have a hard time with, like, I know that they kind of touch on it, but like them just being like, well, we're Eternals, only deviants. That's all we do.
Yeah.
Can't get involved with this other stuff. Like, it's just like a real hard, it's hard for me to be like, those are heroes for me who like, we're like New York, Sin City. Yeah. It's okay. Thanos. We'll just hang back. It's cool. Demons might show up.
I haven't watched it yet, but do you think it would be better if they just didn't address that?
I don't think you can win with it.
The thing is now, throughout, whenever they introduce any new characters, it's going to have to be like, where were you? And all this bad. Like, I think some people just weren't there. And that's fine by me. I don't feel the need to have them all linked anyway, so I don't care. Like, I'm just like, I'm quite happy just to watch it as a standalone thing.
Yeah.
I don't care about the fact that they weren't there helping Iron Man or whatever. Like, it doesn't really
matter. Yeah, they were waiting in line at Hall H.
They couldn't get in. they didn't have a tour. They didn't arrange a tour, so they couldn't join the battle.
And like you know Hawkeye wasn't there, was he, in that first half of the Avengers one? And it's like, why not? But then he sort of needed to not be there, and same with like Captain Marvel. I don't know, it's all very loosely like, I don't know, I'll come when I want.
Yeah. It's all very silly.
It's that curse of continuity that I think comics has like instilled in me. Is that idea of like, now, oh, we can see this is like the films are like the books, they're all together. But then realizing like the books, they don't even have that shit together. Like half the time it's like, I saw a guy on two different teams that came out in the same week and they didn't address what timeline this was on at all. Like, I'm not that.
You know, I was just double booked for that Thanos gig, you know.
Yeah. So like it's really cool. That I feel like we've reached a point where now the movies are like have that same weird continuity sort of issue. But like, I would also, I think, prefer a few more that were just like, and this is our movie. Thanks for joining us on this Marvel adventure. that doesn't have to be involved in 8 other movies from now on.
Well, there's like, I mean, this is a little bit different, but that, you know, there's the thing with Batman, obviously, where, you know, he has the role, he doesn't kill.
Yeah.
It bothered me in Batman vs. Superman when he is just blatantly killing people.
He crushes a man with his Batmobile.
It bothered me in that movie, but it doesn't bother me in Batman Returns when he sets a man on fire and straps a bomb to another man. And the reason why is that the Batman Returns Batman is not the comic book Batman. The thing that they try to explicitly say in Batman vs. Superman is that he's like the Batman from the comics that you know and love, except he's very
ultra-violent.
So that's part of what I think is sort of fun about like those Batman movies for me is that it's like they don't care about, you know, it's like the character, you know, but you get to see like an interpretation of the character versus just sort of being reliant on the actual source material, and then thus like making people upset that you didn't follow it too close. You didn't follow it close enough. Like you tried to do like so much to make it exactly that you didn't do as much, which I feel like that's what I mean. Like with Eternals, it's sort of, I haven't seen it, like I said, so I can't really comment, but I wonder if it's just like, if they just hadn't like mentioned it, if they just shown up, if maybe that would have been better than to be like, well, why didn't you show up during Thanos? And they're like, but we don't do that.
Yeah,
it's not my job.
We are off that day, or whatever. Yeah.
But just real quick, backpedaling. You can't tell me that the comic book Batman doesn't kill people when one of his signature abilities is throwing bat-shaped ninja stars at people.
But with precision, that is Jack.
Precision.
You're
just like Hawkeye never kills people.
Well, no, Hawkeye definitely says
he kills people. That's true.
I do love that Green Arrow has a boxing glove. Batman had a gun, so.
Yeah.
Yeah,
totally.
In that new Hawkeye trailer, and is that out yet, Hawkeye? No. Is out soon?
Tomorrow? 2 days from now? Something like that? It's real
soon. Yeah, she shoots the explosive arrow, and she's like, there's a more dangerous one than that?
It's the boxing glove one.
Yeah.
That's the most dangerous one. Anybody that can shoot that is dangerous to be around, because that's got to be like super friend heavy, so like all of the extra archery math you have to do to get it to land in the right spot.
I've never thought about this before.
It's a killer. Because it's got to be weighty. It's got to be able to like knock somebody out.
Do you guys remember those old Nerf footballs that have like the tail on it? Yeah. That's what I'm just imagining now. It's like it's got to have been like built like so aerodynamically that it
whistles just in there.
As it spins. That'd be pretty radical. Oh, man. All right. Well, it was great talking to you guys.
Great talking with you.
I don't have anything. I can keep gushing about how much I like this book, if you'd like, and keep telling you about all the good scenes and all the sweet stuff.
But I want to hear the bad scenes.
No.
Yeah, so this is my top 10 worst pages, you know?
I would watch that if you just did that with every guest you had on. I mean, I guess you probably run out of guests eventually, though, because they'd be like...
It would have to be like the Eric Andre show where, like, it really worked for his first season, and then people just... It stopped playing into it, you know?
Yeah.
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 Well, yeah, eventually people will catch on.
I was going to say that I will remind people that issue 13 comes out December, I think, 22nd, 23rd, something like that. Anyway, it comes out and it is not being collected. So if you want an issue, if you want that issue, make sure you go out to your local comic shop and grab it, because it won't be collected.
And pre-order big time. Like, if there's a book that you like that you're buying off the shelf, just put it on your subscription list already.
True. Because there's not, with the paper shortages, there's not going to be a guarantee that your comic shop is going to have the comic that you want.
Mm-hmm. And then did y'all want to promote anything else? Anything other than that cool non-collected issue 13 that arrives in stores next month just in time for the holidays?
Issue 12 comes out this week? Next week? This week.
Whoa!
If your comic shop has comics out today, it might be out. But definitely tomorrow for everybody.
And we have this cool Stan Chow variant on it, which is really good.
Oh, yeah, that cover is radical.
Which is apparently sold out at Midtown, so...
Woo!
Yeah, is it out? What day is it today?
Nice.
Yeah, it's out like today or tomorrow, whenever it is. We'll go get that.
Some places comics out on Tuesdays. Some places on Wednesday.
It's my shop cover up all their shelves on Tuesday, so it's there. But they're all covered. They're all covered, and they reveal them on Wednesday.
We used to do something similar. It was like a surprise. Every now and again, you get somebody coming in on like a Tuesday night, and they'd like be peeking at the wall, like, "What can I look? What's behind? What's covering it up? I could almost see." Oh yeah, I'll be back tomorrow. And then they just leave. And I'm like, "All right, cool. I'll see you tomorrow." Cool.
And and I've got Nuba number one is out for me and Chip Zdarsky. That came out a few weeks ago. So if you've not read that, read that. Our when Patreon.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget to
Promote
that Patreon.
And then, number two of Newburn's out soon, probably. I don't know.
Everything in comics is 2 weeks away.
Comps are on the way.
Yeah.
I got this today as well, which I did the cover for. That is that Burn Residue book. You can read that. But I just did the cover for, but this is the hardback version with my cover, which did have type on the front, but it's not there anymore. So, but that's available.
It's kind of cool without the type.
Yeah, it looks quite good actually. But there's nothing on the back and there's nothing on the front, but it's quite a nice book. So yeah, that's probably out. Who knows?
Yeah. at some point.
Yeah.
The nearest future.
I was told that he was going to be sending me a copy of that, and he said that it's going to be a while because it's coming from the UK. So,
is he from the UK? I don't even know where he is.
I think he's from like Delaware or something.
Mine arrived, I think, today. Delaware. Well, it was in my postbox, so I it might have arrived a week ago. I don't know.
But it's coming from the UK, and you're in the UK. You don't have to wait.
No. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's a little more direct for you.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know where it's from. But yeah, it looks quite good. I've only read the first the first chapter of it. I haven't read the actual book yet. I only read the first one before I did the cover. But it looks pretty good.
Very nice. Well, thank you both for being on, for talking to us, for letting us gush and tangent out with you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Really appreciate it. Cool. If y'all want to drop, Jack, do you want to stay on the call and we'll do some housekeeping? Puppy!
Oh, the dog!
Yay!
Toby!
Yeah, and this is the Amazon Fire remote that he destroyed.
So I'm so glad I have a cat. Thanks,
she'll
chew on stuff, but not too crazy.
My dog has like an obsession with eating socks.
Oh, that's, yeah, no. Ooh. Once it's on my foot, he doesn't bother.
That's her thing. Socks. Just like swallow socks whole.
Okay. All righty, guys.
All right. Well, thank you both again.
Yeah. Yeah, been a pleasure.
All right. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
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 That was a funny way to leave that off.
Just, yeah, that was pretty good.
I got like beaten socks whole. Awkward silence.
Right. All right. Should we do the outro?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. That was Christopher Condon and Jacob Phillips talking to us about That Texas Blood, which if you're not reading already, get down on it. The first trade is out. The second trade is coming. And there's a special 13th issue that drops next month that will not be collected in any of the graphic novels. So pretty cool, probably standalone story. Something to look forward to from two great creators and two very nice guys. This has been Outside the Pages. You can follow us on Twitter at Outside The with a zero in the front. That'll link you to all of our other sites, including YouTube and where you can find all of our pods to be casted, all that good stuff. You can find me on Twitter at Chaz Simons. Jack, where can they find you and what do you want to hype up?
You can find me at sin_aesthetics with an X on Twitter or Instagram. And you guys, I guess what I should hype up is, I believe I have, what's today? Oh, okay. So when this drops, I'll have a new track out tomorrow.
Check
that out on my Spotify and SoundCloud. Sin Aesthetic, spelled, you know.
And Jack does music for our show, as most of you regular outsiders know. But if you wanted to know where all those sick beats and cool sounds come from, where. So peep that track after you listen to this, which I guess you would do because you're at the end now. So good job. You made it through. Now go listen to that music. And until next time, keep on reading, turn the page, and wash your hands. Outside the Pages.